Good morning. This is Rick Hoffman. We are Kodiak with Mr. of Kodiak on March 30th, 1996. Good morning, Mr. Benton. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and when you came to Kodiak?
Good morning. I came to Kodiak in the fall of 1971. I came as a pastor for the Bible Chapel in Kodiak. It didn't take long to discover that theologically we didn't have a mix, or at least I didn't have a good mix with the board. And in about 6 months, I left that. I liked Kodiak very much and saw a lot of opportunity. And because my background had been in construction and that type of thing, I just saw a lot of opportunity for development here in Kodiak. And I looked around, and I got back right into, there was a job open with the city and with the borough for a building inspector. And I took that job, which gave me a good opportunity to get acquainted with the real business setting of the community. And in a very short time, I saw a real need for a lumber company. About the same time, I had become acquainted with a fellow who had a sawmill for sale. So I bought this sawmill, and it was right away, it was a real great demand for material. And I was trying to do both jobs. That didn't work. Trying just to run the sawmill on the weekends or evenings because it was a Chiniac. So I stopped working for the city. And at the same time, I kept being impressed with the need for a lumber company in town. There was one. The fellow owned the business, the land, and had his prices very, very high. And didn't have much selection. He was able to charge a very high price for what was there, and if he didn't sell it, didn't make any difference, and nobody had any place else to go. So I started a lumber company at out by Island Lake, and it just jumped right off in full swing. By within 3 months. We were doing $200,000 a month, just in the third month. We were right up there going full speed, and it never stopped.
When was that?
That's 1972-3. business just took right off. And maybe fortunate for me, the competition didn't change his pricing system. He just kept doing the same thing. Well, that enabled me to take the lion's share of the business. And he started specializing in bulk materials and high-priced things and continued to do what he had been doing. And that was a very good start for me. It was interesting because I was always looking around and talking to other people and say, this town needs, and then I would name the business that I thought was really needed and think of some that came to be. I said at that time, I think this town is big enough for a shoe store. Finally, somebody did start one. It didn't go, so maybe I made a bad analysis on that one. But I remember saying, I think this town is really ready for a sweet shop or something like that. And maybe a year later, why Burles started up and has been a very successful candy store and sweet store and developed it. And it's always been my interest to see what economic opportunities were there. Not that I was going to fill them all, I just like to watch them develop. And so I've seen a lot of businesses start in town that I thought were needed here, and most of them have succeeded. I, for a long time, thought we needed a good fishery supply store, a net store, and that type of thing, and that didn't happen. Don't remember the dates now, but I can't remember when that finally did come to town. And I thought it was a great business. I don't really know what happened to it. It was split up, and now there are still fishery supply stores, but the one that started I thought would really be a winner, and it didn't continue going. It's where the Arkenspark Welding is located now. That was all one big fisheries building. I was very surprised to see that not continue. It's just a great
business. About what time did that come on?
I'm thinking that was around 85, I think, 80, something like that. A man by the name of Eglis, who came in and set up the BioDry business. So whenever BioDry started, after BioDry was established, BioDry is the common facility of all the canneries for dehydrating the waste from the fisheries and making fish meal. That's that smelly flu you drive by on the way into town. And when that job was finished, he had made partnership, I don't know what the right word is, with somebody to start this nets business and fishery supply business, which I thought would be a great business, and maybe it was, but eventually it was sold or split up, and today we've had people try to run just a nets development. We've had the fishery supply, and parts of it are still here, but it was all one complex. I always thought that would be a great business to have. Well, my own business went very well, but my real interest was a spiritual interest, and I was very concerned with the youth situation in Kodiak. So I started a group called Young Life, which is a outreach group for high school kids. And we talk about dates, I have to stop and think. Young Life. Son David was a senior in high school, so that would be 1878. Must have. Yeah, that fishery business had to be started before 85 because it must be back closer to 80. I think it was 1978 that I started a youth group here. For kids from all churches, called Young Life, and we developed a steering committee, had people on that board, and developed a program for high school kids. We met every week, and then in summers we had summer camps that we took them to. And I did that until from 1986, I think it was. My wife wanted to get her master's degree, and we went outside for 2 years for her to get her master's degree. And I turned Young Life over to somebody else, and then eventually it just dissolved. So I need to back up from my lumber company. As I had this real interest with youth, that I was putting at least 40 hours a week, sometimes 50, into Young Life. And here I was supposed to be running a lumber company. And Spinard Building Supply came to town looking for a business, a place to put a business, and talking to me about buying my business. And my real interest at the time was youth. So even though the money was with the lumber company, my interest was with the high school kids. And we made an agreement, and I sold the lumber company. but working with the kids, I got a little bit of pay, like a half week, a half, 20 hours a week, and it wasn't great, but nevertheless, I got something. But it wasn't enough to live on. And in the last few years, when I had been working at the lumber company, I kept, well, I bought and sold a number of tracts of land or lots and built spec houses, those types of things. And I was seeing the need for a realty company in town.
And there was no realty?
There was no realty company all this time when I must have purchased and sold 20 properties in town here.
And this was about?
This would be 19, well, all the way from when I got here in 71 till 80, maybe 82. And about the time, while I was still working in my lumber company, and I was thinking of this, matter of fact, I was doing a little reading about being a realtor, and I thought it would give me the freedom I wanted. And just about the time I was making that decision to say, okay, I think I will close down my business and start up a realty company, somebody else started one. And probably my naiveness, but I thought, oh, well, now there are two salespeople there, and it'll be too crowded in town. There's not room for another one. So I continued my lumber company, kept going for a couple, three more years. But when I finally sold the lumber company, I built one more house from the material I had left over. And I kept thinking, I think that's still what I want to do. By then, I could see that there probably was room for another realtor in town. I don't know, you talk to people, what you're interested in. It turned out that one of the teachers in town was a broker and was interested in starting a business. And so I studied for my license, Laura Bealey studied for her license, and we both, together with Toby Cook, started Island Realty. And the criteria, I guess that's the right word I want, for me was that I have the freedom to schedule my time so I can be with kids. That gave me the opportunity for every Thursday to take off from work and go with high school kids. I traveled with the sports teams, and I would travel with the wrestling team. I did a lot of times I drove the buses for the sports teams as they traveled from Anchorage to Homer to Fairbanks. So back in those early days, we would fly to either Homer or Anchorage and charter a bus and then drive our kids around in order to keep the cost down. I lose track of the years, but it was during the time that we were doing Young Life, probably around 83, the school board passed a rule that we no longer could bus for safety reasons. They wanted point-to-point plane transportation. So instead of going to Anchorage and then busing to Fairbanks, they would have to fly to Fairbanks. And that part of the program, it increased the cost, but their concern was all of the hours that were being spent on buses. It was costing the kids school time, and it was, at least in their mind, it was maybe more dangerous. I'm not sure that it was, but we never had any accidents. Nevertheless, the possibility is there when you're in a bus. I guess it's not as safe as the airplane. I don't know. Anyway, that decision was made, and we quit doing that. But I traveled mostly with the wrestling team from about 1980 till 1986 when we left for her to get her master's degree. I went every week with the kids, and the philosophy of Young Life was not to preach to kids, but to become a friend to kids. In other words, the expression is, earn the right to be heard. And we really worked at that. All of the other leaders we had just stressed that become a friend, share what's in your life, and I found it very effective. It was the best program for me I ever was in. If I would have known about it when I first came out of school, that's probably the organization that I should have been with. It just fit my needs exactly. So we had a very good program. We ran on an average of about 45 kids a week in club, and taking 25 to 35 to summer camp down in California or Canada, wherever we happen to go. That program, I know you have to go to somebody else to get some of the other facts. Every year I'd put on a banquet in the process of trying to raise money to help the kids get to camp. For one thing, it's really expensive. And you'll find a lot of people said we put on some of the best seafood banquets that ever been put on around here. We really did get some great banquets and good entertainment and good speakers. And it was a very fun time of life. The things I had hoped from real estate, in fact, it worked out that I was able to take off my time from Thursday night until Monday. So there are very few realtors that don't work weekends, but it so happened no one had started really working Saturdays and Sundays in Kodiak, and that fit me really good because I was just giving up Fridays normally. And so I'd have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to travel with the sports teams. And then I've gone with the choral groups to the state things. And just any sports or any group that was traveling and they needed a chaperone or whatever, I got to go. Those were really good times for me. Real estate went really quite well. Much more volume than I had ever thought there was the potential for, because by that time the other office had developed into five people or something, and we were three, and yet everybody was really busy, and I just didn't realize back a few years earlier that there was that much demand, that much need. Wish I would have made the move sooner. Then now that I'm out of working with the youth, just physically I can't keep that pace up, and I have, in the process, I just let my own property, my own house, kind of fall down around me. I didn't keep up things, and now I'm really spending time trying to get my house in order and my yard in order and do all those things that need to be done. But that was the development from switching from the lumber company over to a Young Life director, and then starting into real estate and making that go.
So you were involved in the Young Life program. Were there similar programs in Kodiak, or was there? Did you think that there was a crucial need, or did you join other similar organizations?
There wasn't any other organization. Each church, of course, has a youth program. But my observation at that time was that none of the churches had an effective youth program to do something for the kids. And by bringing in an organization like Young Life that is designed to work with high schoolers, kind of knowing how to do it, we were able to draw from all of the churches. So instead of each church having 5 to 7 or 8 kids, we were then able to bring together 45 kids and make that a really fun time, and then about once a month try to have something special.
So you drew the camps. You drew the churches together, so or the youth organizations.
Right. My task as a director was to introduce to each church what Young Life was, what it wasn't, that we weren't trying to become a church for the kids. As we have kids make commitments to Christ, we try to feed them back into the logical church. Logical by that I mean if they had a friend that they were running with that went whatever church, we would try to encourage them to go with that person. There wasn't any steering of kids to any particular church. And that's probably what kept it strong, is because then the churches trusted you and didn't think, well, he's just doing that to build up his own Bible chapel or, you know, whatever. That was a risk because I had, at first, I can't remember, but a majority of the people on my board were from the Bible chapel, and we had to be careful that we weren't doing this and just trying to build up our own body.
And did you have cooperation or a good following with that from the people, or did you have to work hard at steering people along your track in the commitments you had made to the...
I think that we had good cooperation. There were some, obviously there's churches have their own mindsets, so they're going to be leery. And we really only had about one, at the most two churches that were very hesitant about encouraging their kids to come. From one of those churches, nevertheless, we got a large turnout. I mean, out of the 45 to 50 kids, 10 to 15 of them coming from this particular church. We had another church in town that had told their kids that they shouldn't come, and yet we got four or five kids from there continuously. And it was because that's where the action was, and they were with kids their own age, and they were being spoken to in a way other than preaching. And it's what communicated with them. So
tell me one of the two success stories, the children that you helped to develop,
okay,
if you will.
I think, well, here I'm kind of trying to avoid names.
Sure, that's fine.
We have a boy who was really ready to go off the deep end of any kind of bad activity that he would desire. And he started coming to the club meeting at first very reluctantly. Well, I'll back up a little and say, because I spent time with the wrestling clubs and put my emphasis on establishing a relationship, there were times when we had all but one or two of the wrestlers coming to our meeting each week. And it was in that process, one of these boys was one of the last ones to come, but the guys were coming and they were talking about it and they invited him and he showed up. Well, it was not very long until he became very enthusiastic about hearing what was being said and what was being offered. And all I can say now is that I really saw his life turned around, changed, became really a happier person, and stopped in the direction of destruction, of doing what he was going to do. For me, certain things are successes that success to me meant when someone came to know Christ and then went ahead and lived consistent with what they had, they made this commitment. And there were a number of kids. We have families in town today that are Christian families as a result of having come through the Young Life program. Very significant to me was a couple of girls who made commitments and then within 3 months one of them drowned out here. And I, you know, it's really, to me, that was really significant that this girl had made and then had been pretty consistent with her life, that showed it really had meant something to her and she had changed. So those are success stories when you have that kind of turnaround. There are failures. I mean, you work with kids and work with kids, and they come and they enjoy the time together, and then they get out of high school and their lives are just wild and out of control and no, it seems that religion had no significance in our life. I know sometimes I'm just disappointed, but that's the way it is, and we have no control over that. The well, I could, I mean, again, there are other individual kids. Again, I had a girl who just needed somebody to talk to because she was in such a dysfunctional family situation, and I felt that we really contributed to her life, that she had somebody else to go to and just lay it all out and say, you know, this is what it is, and we could talk with her and encourage her. Now I see her in church. There's 10, 15 years later, I don't know what it is, but I see her there with a husband, with a child, and she was going through extremely difficult family times. So we know that, I don't know how she would have gone through if we hadn't been there. She may have found some other way, but certainly it turned out for the good.
When you were looking at the Young Life program in the late 70s and looking at developing it and leading it, did you see an overwhelming problem in Kodiak with the social values, or was it just what brought you to do that in Kodiak?
That would be exactly it. We saw high school kids, I would describe as out of control. I think our school made a very wrong decision back around 1974 or 5. We had a very open campus, so open that kids didn't even know if your kids were in school. There was no reporting from the school back to the parents. On some classes, if they took roll, it didn't mean anything. And a lot of classes didn't even take roll. So we had a lot of kids who were leaving in the morning, supposedly going to school, and not going to school. Maybe, you know, finding out when tests were and come in and take the tests. That did change, but during the time that I was watching my own kids start into high school and come up through high school, I was seeing this just complete lack of control that the school had over the kids because of this open campus policy. And I had high school kids coming in. I had 5 kids coming up through the system. And we just found that there was nothing for these kids to do, and especially there was no spiritual guidance at all. Very few of the kids were going to church. And we just read the system as really being in need of help. I think today, well, we find a lot of parents are also concerned about their kids, and we have this parent advisory group in school. And what do we have for them to do? Well, that's the same kind of things that I saw back at that time. And my solution was to provide a spiritual outlet and a group. Their solution is to do things, provide, like tonight, they have the open gym after wrestling, and I guess it's great. But that's what they needed, something to do, and parents take an interest in providing things for the kids.
This Students Night Out, I think it's called.
Yes.
Now, one tonight, and it's been developing particularly active over the last 6 months. Did you see any pushes like this in the community before this? Is this the first time something like this has happened?
Yes, it's the first time. Through Young Life, we made other pushes. Like at graduation time, we started providing alternate activities for kids, and made the bowling alley open and a free movie, and set up those kinds of things, which have been picked up and followed through with, and people don't even realize that we started that back in those days, but we did that. We'd go around and make all the arrangements so that the kids would have an alternative to going out to the beach and partying. Had reasonably good response from that. We would get, I don't know numbers right now, but maybe half of the graduating student body would take part in that, where maybe 10% of them were involved in Young Life. See, we get a lot of kids on those special nights, which just confirm that we needed to provide something for them to do, and they'd have something to do other than going out to the beach parties.
In general, why do you think that the community didn't act on the on these needs?
When you see the need, it's when you have your own kids in school. It's like my wife and I, and then of course some of my committee people, we see the need and we try to develop this type of thing. And I believe that we are always, as we progress, you keep bringing new people into this situation where their kids are now in junior and seniors in high school, and they start seeing the turmoil and the fact that the kids are looking for something to do, and they're going to create their own thing to do. I can't answer that, except that, again, you've come along with some parents who were concerned enough that they stepped out to say, we've got to do something about this. You go through some period of time when the people might have said, I wish something was being done about it, but nobody was taking the lead to step up and do it. This hasn't happened overnight. They've had this parent advisory groups going for 2 years, and they have speakers come to them. I go usually and talk about issues in the school, have kids there 2, 3 years. Give their input, what they think, and obviously, repeatedly, time and time again, the issue of alcohol comes up, and you have a lot of you just always have a lot of resistance to cutting that out of the school program. It's just a natural thing that they want to have some way to party every weekend.
Back in the mid to late 70s, when you were developing the Young Life program, were drugs a problem in the community? Was that a significant issue with your program?
Alcohol was the main problem. Marijuana probably, we started actually making an impact well, let me think about dates. I would say probably just very shortly after we started Young Life, I can think specifically of people in the 80 group that were definitely using, and because we've had some conversations with them, and that was back when the kids were arguing, well, it's not really harmful, and you know, before they had all of the medical information on marijuana. And so we have had club meetings where we talked about it, and some kids would defend their position. Every year I brought speakers in from national organizations, particularly Athletes in Action. I brought people here for the athletic banquets each year, and so we would, and I brought people up who basically spoke to the theme of drugs and marijuana and alcohol, and we had them in the school and the assemblies and things like that. But the attitude back then was, oh, marijuana is not really so bad. Now, we had a couple of speakers who did a good job of maybe changing people's minds. Again, had one boy who was whose father is very well known in town, who's was very popular in school, and was very much involved in marijuana. And right now, I cannot remember the fellow's name that I brought up here as an assembly speaker. it made an impact on this boy. And then in spring of that year, we held a camp, spring break, matter of fact, this time, over on Woody Island. I took the facilities over there and we opened them up. We had a big camp. And as a result of that camp, this young man made a commitment to Christ. And his life just really turned around. And first thing he did was stop using and cleaned up a lot of other things that I'm sure his parents didn't even know he was doing. I would say, we talked about success stories a while ago, there's another boy that I don't know where he would have gone. And he was very smart and had an opportunity, no doubt was going on to college, but was so involved in things that his parents didn't know about that I don't know if he made it or not. And that was in about 84, 83 or 84, I'm not sure the year on that one. But by then, sometime in the early 80s, we weren't contending with just alcohol anymore. We were contending with marijuana. It wasn't until the last year or so that 86, 85 for sure, we had kids in club that we knew were using coke.
When was this?
86.
Cocaine.
Mm-hmm. But that's the last year that I was effectively involved. And I left somebody else over a couple of years. I came back. We tried to revive it, but unless I get in and really work at it, it just doesn't go on its own. You've got to have people who are doing relational things, or else you just simply are establishing another meeting where you invite kids and then you preach to them. That's not effective. Mm-hmm. It's not effective. At least my opinion is not effective.
Do you think that the appearance of drugs in Kodiak around, you said about 1980 or so is when you noticed it, was an isolated thing, or do you think it was a cultural move in the United States that had finally hit Kodiak?
It probably was here more than I knew, even before that. It's very interesting, let me say it this way. By doing what I was trying to do, that is establish relationship with kids, we call it a relational thing, become a friend to the kids, an adult friend to kids, not somebody who's preached to them. It's very interesting that after you establish this relationship, the kids will treat me, treat a person who does this, almost as an equal. They'll talk to you about things you would believe they'd never tell you. They will do their natural thing in front of you. I mean, once you've established this buddy relationship, and the bars go down, you really get to know the kids. And it could be in that first year or so, I hadn't established that relationship where these kind of things were revealed to me. And I don't believe they were there. But I do know that even in the group of 78, I do know that there were a couple of, at least three of the kids in there at that time were smoking marijuana. I can think of names of kids back in that first group. But it really was not strong until I got up a little later that I was really aware of it. It maybe have to do with the relationship I established. Kids will talk. I don't know how much of this I want to put on here now. But kids will talk about the real struggle they're having. And once you establish that relationship and they feel safe, and one of the things we would tell the kids is anything that we know about you, anything that you develop, we're not going to pass on to anybody unless it's life-threatening to yourself or somebody else. In other words, what you tell us stays with us.
That's much in line with the social services programs we have now.
And that was important because if I had somebody talking to me about suicide, then I would tell them, we always had this, the first talk every year, always talked about these kind of things and said, you can talk to any of us and it's going to stay with us unless it has something to do with life-threatening situation. With that, it takes them time to believe you. It has to be established, but then pretty soon you're finding out about their struggles with sex, their struggles with alcohol, their frustrations or their desires. We had, I don't know to this day, that if there was a pastor of one church whose daughter was probably coming as drunk to school half the time. I don't think he ever even knew she ever drank. And she was really struggling with trying to stop, and basically was really an alcoholic in high school as a sophomore. It just kind of blows you away that this kind of thing happened and how they could hide it. She was drinking before she came to school, hiding a bottle in school, drinking in school, and yet covering it up with mints and things when she went home.
Were you involved with the development of any of the community's social services, such as the mental health clinic?
No. That was established through the borough system. Mine was has been strictly with Young Life and working with youth. My interest. I started out, I was thinking about development, about construction. The drift of this has gone over to youth, and that was my real interest all the time, and still is. I've got 15 grandkids, and I'm concerned about what's being done. I'm real happy to see these parent advisory groups and the things that they're doing for the night out for kids, and I hope that it's giving the kids that release, place to, they want to be doing something, they want to be with people, they want to have action, and we just don't have, not only we, but other people don't always have that.
One thing that I've noticed in this history course that I'm taking is the recurring theme in Alaska of freedom and independence. In your early days in Kodiak, can you tell us a little bit about the community organization and where the community was headed in a social setting, such as the Chamber of Commerce or any of the clubs in town, the Rotary, and so on? Have you had any involvement in that?
No, I haven't. And I'm thinking about your statement of independence. We hear this often repeated about Alaskans being independent, and that's why people came here and that type of thing. I guess the best place to observe that is borough meetings when it comes to trying to establish controls or ordinances and how people feel about those types of things. I don't know that I have really experienced it in any way that I could say that had an effect on the decisions that were made or what I did or that type of thing.
One of the comments that I heard in our first class was, you hear frequently in Kodiak, we don't care how they do it outside, this is how we do it here. Where do you think that comes from?
It has to do with what you said, this independence, people saying we don't want control from, too much control from government. I've heard the expression. I don't really know how, what it applies to, though. We end up having a building code. We have, there are some times when I think we have more regulations or more requirements than are necessary, but we end up adopting is the word I want, the very same types of building codes and control codes that other places have. It may be an attitude, the idea, we'll do it our way here, but I don't really know how we differ. I don't think that we differ.
The and this ties again into the consistency in values that you were talking about before. You were talking about the need in the children for discipline and accountability. How do you think that relates to adults in a community at large?
Well, maybe this has something to do with independence that we were just talking about. I found, much to my surprise, that a lot of adults did not feel as I